Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Trustees to mull budget and policy wording. New PHS principal also on the agenda. The 2020-21 budget and wording and policies regarding reduction in force will be on the agenda for the Ector County Independent School District Board of Trustees meeting set for 6 p.m. today, May 19th. The meeting will be held virtually due to coronavirus concerns. Revenue for the 2020-21 budget year is projected to be $307,129,000. Payroll is expected to be at $246,949,256. Supplemental agenda material said. Last year, payroll was $218,644,297, and expenditures were $301,348,909. The tax rate for 2019-2020 was a total of $1.17 per $100 valuation. Legislation passed by lawmakers during the last session compressed the maintenance and operations rate to $1.06 per $100 valuation. This will increase to $1.07 per $100 valuation for the coming school year. West Texas has been hit with a downturn in oil prices, plus the economic effects of the coronavirus. Tax revenues have declined for most entities as a result. To prepare for uncertain times ahead, a wording change is being proposed in case employment is impacted. ECISD spokesman Mike Adkins said Superintendent Scott Murray is all about processes. He quickly saw that our district has been reacting to situations as they arise instead of preparing for uncertainty in advance. Now that other districts and municipalities are beginning to freeze hiring and cut budgets, he wants all the pieces in place in case it reaches that point for us. Again, with all the openings we have, it will be a completely different situation than most will face, Adkins said in a text message. The board also will deliberate in closed session on hiring of a principal for Permian High School and administrations and a chief financial officer. Danny Gex, PHS principal, is moving to the Houston area in part to take care of his mother who has cancer. The board also will recognize the Bronco Spirit and the Mojo Spirit scholarship recipients. Recognize the Memorial Scholarship Fund recipients and the top 10 graduates from each high school. Intersection Impact. New Tech Odessa named Spotlight School by Ruth Campbell. George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa has been named a New Tech Network Spotlight School. Formerly known as a national demonstration site, New Tech Principal Gerardo Ramirez said the designation lets people at other campuses across the country know what NTO is doing and learn from it as well. We receive the designation as a spotlight school once we apply. We stay with that designation. Level 1 is called Ignite. Then there are more levels that we can look into receiving after that. Really, it's a way for our work to be displayed so others can learn from us. But it also opens up a door for us because then we'll have a network of other schools that we can reach out to because maybe we struggle in the area of managing technology. So what are other schools doing out there when it comes to managing technology that we can learn from, Ramirez said. I think it opens up kind of that sharing network with other schools across the country. Ramirez noted that in times like these, it's good to hear some good news. This is something we're excited about. This is something that we're celebrating, and it just shows all the hard work that our staff has been doing here at NTO, he said. There are 6 parts to the application: portrait of a graduate, adult culture, student voice, project-based learning, assessment practices, and onboarding of staff and students. It's not to say that our campus is great at everything, that we have everything figured out, that we have necessarily project-based learning figured out, because that's not true. It just really showcasing some of the great things that we're doing here at NTO. As we talked to the staff, as we collected data from students, one common phrase that students were proud of, that they really wanted to highlight to other schools across the country, especially new tech schools, was our culture. And some of the phrases that would come out pretty often were a sense of belonging. Here they felt like a part of a family. Here they felt that they were noticed. Here that they didn't feel like they were just a number. We know their name and they have a sense of belonging here, Ramirez said. Students at New Tech come from 6 different middle schools, and the year kicks off with Culture Week to get students acclimated to the core values of trust, respect, and responsibility. In Odessa especially, we've had an influx of people from all over the place, all across the country. And so how do you acclimate students to a campus that is so unique, that is so different? Our Culture Week really helps build that foundation of knowing our school culture, our expectations, what is project-based learning, getting familiar with the technology expectations, and then how to transition into a high school experience for our new freshmen, and then still develop our incoming sophomores, juniors, and seniors, Ramirez said. Ramirez said the Spotlight School is a relatively new designation. I know we had the New Tech demonstration site a while back. With all the transition, we didn't apply again for demonstration site. And since the New Tech network, I would say probably less than a year, they switched over from demonstration site to Spotlight School. So this was our first time applying, he added. He said they worked closely with school development coach Galen Brannon. It was a lot of work, Ramirez said. It was pretty extensive. A lot of great conversations, but more than just receiving a designation, we learned a lot about our own practices, where we still need to improve, and then showcasing some of the great things that our school is doing, he said. They submitted the application, and then phase 2 was submission of a learning module, and it showcases the learning piece for other campus principals and schools across the country to learn more about NTO in Odessa. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Tuesday, May 19th. Joseph Arthur Art Shepherd, Jr., 80, passed away from a long-fought cardiopulmonary condition on May 6th at home with his family by his side. He was laid to rest in his hometown of Burnett, Texas, this week during a private graveside service. Art was predeceased by his father, his beloved mother, Regina Black Shepherd, and his sisters Vera Jo and Suzanne. He is survived by his cherished wife of 60 years, Martha Davis Shepherd, and his 2 sons and their families, Ben, Jane, and Eleanor Shepherd of Austin, and Joseph Arthur Trey Shepherd III, and his sons Wyatt and Wesley of Burnett. Art also leaves his stepmother, Epiphania Fanny Shepherd of Burnett, and 2 siblings and their families, Juan, Ann, Jose, and Mateo Shepherd of Austin, and Maria Shepherd Walker and her children of Dallas. In remembrance, the family suggests a donation to the St. David's Episcopal Church Foundation, 301 East 8th Street, Austin, Texas, 78701, or the West Austin Youth Association, 1314 Exposition Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78703. Online, www.waya.org/donate. Remembrances may be shared at www.wcfish.com. Arrangements by Weed Corley Fish Funeral Home, Austin, Texas. Frank Allen Mutter, Sr., age 83, of Odessa, passed from this life on Friday, May 15th. He was born on Thursday, April 29th, 1937, in Kimball, West Virginia, to the late Spencer Bailey and Dorothy Crick Mutter. Those left who cherish his love and memories are his beloved wife, Juanita Annie Mutter of Odessa, sons Frank Allen Mutter, Jr. of California, and Troy Mutter of Roswell, New Mexico, sister Ann Humphreys of Jasper, Alabama, as well as 10 grandchildren and 6 great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his son, Bernie Mutter, and daughter, Shauna Patrick. Memorial services will be held at a later date and time to be announced. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Samuel Zamudio left his life on May 17th to enter eternal glory surrounded by his beloved family. He was born in southern Mexico to Severino Zamudio and Rosario Calderon on March 5th, 1951. Samuel is preceded in death by his parents and younger sister. Those left to cherish his memory are his wife, Socorro, daughters Nancy Lujan, Mary Luce Rangel, Patricia Martin, Rosie Zamudio, Virginia Fuentes, Moises Zamudio, Ama Luisa Gomez, Rosario Sanchez, and son Jose Juarez. 15 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. Gary Collier, 72, of Midland, died Sunday, May 17th. Graveside service is scheduled for 3 p.m. May 20th at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are by Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home of Midland. John Edward Johnson, 80, of Midland, died Saturday, May 16th in Midland. Memorial service is scheduled for 2 p.m. May 21st, First Southern Baptist Church in Gardendale. Derek Looney is officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Vicki Ann Dader Luna, 65, of Odessa, died Saturday, May 16th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Thursday, May 21st, at Acres West 24-Hour Funeral Chapel.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, May 19th, 2020. Education section. Midland College Profiles by Rebecca Bell. MC leads alum to higher education career. Rebecca Karth Chabnaki traveled 23 hours on a Greyhound bus in 2007 to be able to attend Midland College. My father had taken a job in Midland with Key Energy, Chabnaki said. We were living in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and my mother had to stay there to take care of selling the house. Midland College classes were about to start, so I took a bus from Grand Rapids to Midland. I was 17 and had lived in Michigan all my life. It was really hot when I arrived in Midland in late August. However, Chabnaki didn't let the dry, warm climate interfere with her making the most of her Midland College experience. She was an active member of the MC Student Government Association, the student newspaper staff, students in philanthropy, and Phi Theta Kappa Honor Society. During her second year at MC, she served as president of the Student Government Association, editor-in-chief of the newspaper, and a peer tutor. Chajnaki graduated from Midland College in 2009 as an honor graduate. The Coca-Cola Scholars Foundation recognized Chajnaki as a Gold Leaders of Promise Scholar, an honor that included a continuing scholarship to the University of Texas in Arlington. "I had a great experience at Midland College," Chajnaki said. "In fact, Midland College was instrumental to my future success in higher education. I think it is because of Midland College that I chose a career in higher education." Upon graduating from Midland College, Chajnaki transferred to UTA and majored in public relations. After obtaining her bachelor's degree with honors, she continued at UTA to receive a master's degree in communications. She recently completed a doctoral degree in educational leadership from UTA and is currently working as the assistant director of the UTA Honors College and as an adjunct professor. Her responsibilities include advising students with degree progression, structuring the Honor College curriculum, assessing outcomes, and teaching research courses. Chajnaki's younger siblings, Susanna and Levi, also are MC alumni. Susanna followed in her sister's footsteps as president of the MC Student Government Association. The family no longer resides in Midland, but while living here, all nine children volunteered at the Friends of the Library bookstore. Their mother, Mary Ann, worked for the Midland County Public Library. Chajnaki and her husband, John, were married in 2013. John, a native of Fort Worth, is a network analyst for NTT in Dallas. The couple, along with their cat named Q, enjoys life in the Metroplex. When the COVID-19 pandemic quarantine is lifted, Chajnaki is looking forward to once again practicing Taekwondo, a sport in which she holds a brown belt designation. She also volunteers in the Arlington community and with various UTA campus outreach programs. Chajnaki said that it all started with Midland College. "I absolutely loved my college experience at MC. I really liked working with other students in the Student Government Association, the student newspaper, and students in philanthropy. I had great professors and advisors in MC who not only taught the course material but also took the time to guide and help me discover my talents and potential. I guess that's what made me decide that I wanted a career in a college environment where I'm able to serve as a teacher and mentor to students." Teachers Provide Meaningful Learning Experiences, by Heather Brown, Greenwood ISD. What an unusual time of learning these last couple of months have been. It has been wonderful to see teachers across our district roll with the changes and become teachers of distance learners practically overnight. Without training or preparation and very little resources, teachers across our state and in our community of Greenwood figured it out and provided learning experiences for students to be able to finish out the school year strong. At Greenwood Intermediate School, Dana Huber implemented a campus website almost immediately after quarantine started that included a page for each teacher, a place for Principal Kristen Hopkins to post her daily morning announcements, and a counselor's corner. This allowed students and teachers to maintain a sense of routine and normalcy that is paramount in this time of uncertainty. Ms. Hopkins posted her videoed morning announcements like clockwork each day. This was a great way for students to keep a sense of routine even while working at home and have a sense of safety and normalcy by having access to their principal each day. The counselor page offered helpful tips for students during times of stress and provided fun activities as well. Campus counselor Katie Rowalt has been an active with the food program in the district and has been very hands-on in making sure the needs of families on her campus are being met during this difficult time. Teachers at Greenwood High School have assignments online from the beginning of the quarantine and provided students with extra help during Zoom meetings or Google Hangouts. I know many high school teachers who spent the one-on-one, who spent time one-on-one with students through email or FaceTime and make sure they understood the assignments or had what they needed at home. Principal Stacy Jones made many home visits during this time, not only for academic reasons, but to make sure families had enough food and essentials. Counselors Jamie Savage and Amanda Lambert ran a senior spotlight page on Facebook and held a parade with Mr. Jones to help celebrate the seniors who are in the top 10% of the graduating class. Band directors Suzanne Rhines, Gabe Hernandez, and Victor Ordonez held a virtual band banquet to honor band students and ensure that seniors did not miss out on their last banquet. Although it has been hard to cover everything, efforts have been made at the high school campus to make this year as smooth as possible for everyone and as special as it can be for the seniors. At Brooks Middle School, Coach Katie Voss created videos composed of individual messages from each teacher to post to the school Facebook page, keeping students in contact with their teachers. Teachers in the middle school stayed in contact with students through Google Classroom and various project-based assignments. Members of the student council sent video or picture communication back to the teachers through their sponsor, Lacey Wells. GT teacher Carrie Latham sent her gifted and talented students problem-solving challenges that they completed along with their required coursework. Greenwood Elementary School has had a great mix of technology and good old-fashioned hands-on learning. Liffen Moulter's GT students have been having some interesting Zoom sessions to stretch their thinking and creativity. Kindergarten has had some great project-based learning experiences each week to enhance the assignments, which has not only kept the learning fun, but has kept the families in touch with their teachers on a more personal level, which is what Greenwood is known for. Students have created obstacle courses, made rivers and dams, sorted and graphed, and created secret sacks. Even though we have been apart, relationships have flourished and students have learned and grown. This new normal of a quarantine life did not come with an instruction manual or a professional development day. Teachers, however, have done what teachers do. They rolled up their sleeves and figured it out. From the first day, they have provided meaningful learning experiences the best way they know how, while still maintaining relationships with students, making them feel important, holding them accountable, and making it as fun as it can be. This is just one more reason I am proud to be a Greenwood Ranger. Van Hooser reflects on time as Lee High School principal. By Christopher Hadorn, Chadorn at MRT.com. Stan Van Hooser has a deep-rooted love for Lee High School, and he's thankful that he got to preside over his alma mater for 5 academic years. Van Hooser, 65, is stepping down as Lee principal at the end of this academic year to serve Midland ISD in an administrative role as executive director for state and federal funding. The 1972 Lee grad said it was a difficult decision to step aside as principal, which he has served as since 2015. The school had a profound impact on his life as he played for legendary coach Ernie Johnson as a 2-year letterman in baseball and the late Jim Acri as a 2-way player as a senior on the football gridiron. Van Hooser, who has spent 32 years in education, said it was the right time to leave his post with the changing technological landscape and virtual learning during the COVID-19 pandemic. He joked that he might have been the oldest principal at a Class 6A school in the state. "I never would have dreamed that I would have gotten to be principal at Midland Lee High School," Van Hooser said. "Even once you get into education, you don't think that you're going to be the principal of the high school you went to. But to get the opportunity to come back here and be the principal, Some people may not think so, but I love that school, and I'm proud to be a Lee Rebel. I would spend times in the spring and in the summer mowing the yard, clipping trees, pulling weeds, because I want my school to look good. The school means a lot to me, but also know with the new things going on and a lot of things that we've had to learn in this current situation and with a lot of new programs that are coming along, I'm not the youngest guy in the world, and I hear a lot of the younger people with great ideas. I think it's time for somebody with some different ideas to come in and do some good things at Lee High School. Van Hooser said one of his best decisions as principal was hiring Clint Hartman as head football coach in 2016. Hartman has guided the Rebels to a 30-8 record and two district titles over the last 3 years, the program's best run since the early 2000s. Van Hooser is glad that the Rebel athletic program in general have enjoyed an uptick in success across the board. He is proud of how the fine arts programs, the choir, orchestra, band, and theater, have performed during his time as principal. Van Hooser believes that the fine arts programs and robotics have students who accomplish amazing things, and he's glad that they get recognized for their talents. Most of the kids in robotics are just normal students, Van Hooser said. It's not our top students in robotics. They're just finding something they like and really take to it. We've qualified for state and qualified for worlds. Those are the things I remember about Lee High School. It's the kids and the staff that we have there. We have some really good teachers that really care about students. Van Hooser said his toughest moment as principal was the death of student Essence Glover, who collapsed after a basketball practice in September 2018. That still chokes me up, Van Hooser said. Essence was a young lady that I talked to every day, and she was just so full of life. You couldn't help but like Essence if you knew her. Van Hooser said what he will miss most is interacting with the kids and being in the hallways of Lee High School. One of his favorite moments every year is dressing up as Santa Claus and going to the elementary schools to give presents. A lot of people think the principals that you're seeing bad kids all day long, Van Hooser said. And yes, we do see some kids that make mistakes, but those are the kids you also get to really know and grow to love. You understand their situation, and you miss seeing those kids, and you miss seeing them do the right thing occasionally. Even after he moves over to MISD administration, Van Hooser says he will still be around Lee, rooting for the Rebels at sporting events. As he heads down the home stretch of his run as principal, Van Hooser wishes he could experience one more graduation ceremony, which won't take place because of the COVID-19 outbreak. He said it's not for his own enjoyment, but for the seniors who won't get to experience that meaningful ceremony. My heart breaks for our seniors, he said. They didn't get to finish out their athletic careers or their fine art careers. A graduation is probably not going to be what they envision it to be, and those are memories that mean a lot to students. But I also know that we also have amazing kids. They're going to do some great things. This isn't going to be their last time to get to have a special moment in their lives.
Hello, this is April, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, May 17, 2020. Viewpoints. Now is the time to stand up for your God-given rights. Ginny Cudd, former mayoral candidate. A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government. Thomas Jefferson. Our freedoms and God-given inalienable rights are under attack, and we are just lying down and taking it. We are not experienced in the government overtly taking away our rights. Crisis, fear, and the guise of protecting us or the common good are the ways our government whittles away at our freedoms. Freedom of religion. Our religious leaders are letting the government dictate how they lead their congregants. Why? Instead of allowing those who want to freely come and worship the God of their choosing It appears they have caved to fear and political correctness. The governor made a specific declaration that churches are essential. If a specific declaration is necessary, we know that we have already sacrificed too much power over our freedom of religion. Tracing is being used in churches across the country, including in Kansas City, Missouri, where gatherings of more than 10 people are prohibited and attendees must register with the state. It is disappointing that the majority of church leaders appear to be cowering to political correctness. Freedom of speech. What is freedom of speech? If you have ever had your Facebook post censored or been thrown in FB jail, you have experienced some of the vast amount of censorship that is going on today. Freedom of speech is just that. Freedom to speak your opinion whether anyone agrees with it or not. The San Antonio City Council passed an ordinance that anyone referencing the country of origin of this virus will be investigated for hate speech. The Second Amendment. As one of the people who helped organize the show of support for the two Odessa businesses that chose to open against the governor's recommendation, I am surprised at how many Second Amendment supporters have decided to discriminate against what type of gun is acceptable. Regardless of your preference in guns, the Second Amendment protects any law-abiding citizen's right to possess and carry. While everyone is focused on the pandemic, several states are passing red flag laws and anti-gun legislation. In New Mexico, you are no longer allowed to operate a gun store or purchase a gun. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We citizens are allowing our government to dictate what jobs are essential and not essential. Our local and state officials are discriminating against types of businesses when all of the chain or big box stores are allowed to remain open. I have yet to see one single elected official in our community stand up for small businesses. They have all let us down. Small businesses employ 66% of the workforce in America, and even now, there are still some businesses that do not know when they can open in Texas. Regardless of the type of business, our Constitution assures each of us the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. States are releasing convicted criminals and jailing business owners. Why haven't the organizations whose missions are to support small businesses made a public statement supporting all small businesses and their right to operate? Do we really believe that all of these freedoms and rights will be returned to us when this pandemic is over? No! We'll have to fight for them more than we ever have before. Someone has always fought for our rights. Both of my grandfathers were willing to give their lives to fight for our rights and freedoms in World War II. Did that willingness to fight for others' rights and freedoms die with the Greatest Generation? Why are we so afraid that we are willing to take the politically correct approach of not standing up for what's right and hoping that it will all be over soon? Now is the time for my generation to stand against the unconstitutional force of our elected officials. Ronald Reagan said, "Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. Or one day we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was once like in the United States where men were free. I am willing to stand up and fight for my rights, your rights, and the rights of future generations. Are you?" Talk to me better. Commissioners' meeting becomes mediating session. Caitlin Randall. See Randall at MRT.com. Court is tutored on how to effectively communicate. Midland County Judge Terry Johnson from left and Commissioners Scott Ramsey, Robin Donnelly, Luis Sanchez, and Randy Prude listened to presentations to the court on February 11, 2019. A Midland County Commissioners Court strategic planning session on Thursday turned into a lesson on communication. A Midland County Commissioners Court meeting on Thursday that was billed as a planning session to address the myriad ways county departments could be affected by the coronavirus pandemic, instead turned into commissioners in open court discussing how they could better communicate and promising not to talk about one another behind each other's backs. The meeting was led by a former city councilman, John James, whose new role in the county is unclear. His company, Mode Communications, created the chat initiative that's meant to track how many residents are experiencing symptoms of COVID-19. He also led the county's strategic planning workshop on May 5. Thursday's meeting kicked off with James saying he wasn't trying to kick beehives, but instead draw out discussion. What followed was 3 hours of James prompting the commissioners on how to make their communication more effective. It's clear to anyone who's attended commissioners' court meetings consistently over the last year that the five men don't always agree or get along. Maybe a mediating session was a long time coming. But have relations really gotten so bad that it had to be done in open court? As the Reporter Telegram's county government reporter, I found the oddest moment of the meeting to be James eliciting commissioners to agree not to throw rocks at each other in the newspaper. He said, "Let's not use the media to share our dirty laundry or our disdain from one another." The suggestion that I've been a pawn and my reporting has been used as an outlet for petty fights is insulting. But it had never occurred to me that the commissioners might be hashing it out through my articles and not actually talking to one another. If that's the case, obviously there are better alternatives. I've been covering commissioners' court meetings for more than a year. The first article I wrote for the Reporter Telegram was about a commissioners' meeting, and it was a contentious one. Commissioner Luis Sanchez had confronted the others about roads in his district not being repaved, despite the roads being budgeted for and approved for repaving. It appeared the funds had been reallocated for roads in other districts. It's almost fitting that my first impression of the Midland County Commissioner's Court, because there's been many topics the court has been divided on since then. Often the division aligns with a 3-2 vote, but not always. They've disagreed on appointing an acting sheriff, naming the downtown library and operations at the Horseshoe Complex. They disagreed, though not in court, about whether the elections administrator should be replaced after the Midland County Elections Office botched an election and recount. Differing opinions and diverging priorities can be a healthy part of government, and my experience covering the commissioner's court has led me to believe each member is knowledgeable and capable. Each has his own subset of expertise that can benefit the group as a whole. I think the issue arises when those differing opinions create a deadlock and a court session ends up devoted to mitigating tensions, as was the case on Thursday. Perhaps the most frustrating aspect of Thursday's meeting was that a discussion of the strategic planning workshop, as was scheduled on the meeting's agenda, is badly needed. Several department heads raised potential problems resulting from the pandemic that need addressing, from challenges with holding elections to a decline in tax revenue to a likely backlog in court cases because of trials being postponed. I expected Thursday's meeting to be a productive brainstorm of ways to tackle these problems and was disappointed, as a resident and taxpayer, that those 3 hours were instead used for discussing grievances. Again, maybe mediation is needed on some level, but a year's worth of conflict culminating in a third party asking them to air their grievances in open court might not have instilled confidence in a public facing so much uncertainty. The months and possibly years ahead will bring the most devastating economic downturn of most Midlanders' lifetimes, and they desperately need to be assured there's effective leadership in place. I hope the commissioners will recognize that and be more united in confronting the challenges that lie ahead.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, May 17th, 2020. 13 education students initiated into Kappa Delta Pi. Alpine. The Sul Ross State University Education Department inducted 13 education majors into Kappa Delta Pi during a virtual Zoom ceremony Thursday evening. Robert Kanukin, Executive Vice President and Provost, addressed the group and congratulated them on their accomplishments. Outgoing President Talisa Jones, Houston, and Counselor Jean Kvarnstrom delivered the initiation ceremony. Kvarnstrom installed the new president for Zeta Delta, Angelique Gonzalez. Spring 2020 initiates include Alma Baeza, Presidio, Daniel Carrillo, Presidio, Gina Cuellar, Carrizo Springs, Patricia Garcia, Fort Davis, Brandy Garner, Midland, Gail Glenn, Midland, Angelique Gonzalez, Alpine, Leslie Mendoza, Presidio, Ana Ortiz Alanis, Carrizo Springs, Kathia Pando, Presidio, Monica Salmon, Alpine, Amber Spears, Alamo, and Anthony Urias, Fort Stockton. Students receiving graduation cords at the meeting were Talisa Jones, Patricia Garcia, and Amy Lopez, San Angelo. Kappa Delta Pi, International Honor Society in Education, was founded by William Bagley, Truman Kelly, and Thomas Edgar Musselman in 1911 at the University of Illinois to foster excellence in education and promote fellowship among those dedicated to teaching. The founders chose the name from the Greek words knowledge, duty, and power. Kappa Delta Pi members keep good company. Albert Einstein, George Washington Carver, Eleanor Roosevelt, and Margaret Mead are just a few members who have made outstanding contributions to the development of professional education. For over a century, the society has consistently grown, starting with a local chapter to become the international organization it is today, with an initiated membership that exceeds 1.2 million. The mission of Kappa Delta Pi is to sustain an honored community of diverse educators by promoting excellence and advancing scholarship, leadership, and service. Odessa native named TTUHSC sole finalist for president. The Texas Tech University System Board of Regents recently named Lori Rice Spearman as the finalist and candidate for the presidency of Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, TTUHSC. Since November of last year, a 14-person committee has been conducting a national search to identify the next president of TTUHSC. As sole finalist, state law requires that 21 days must pass before final action can be taken on her formal appointment, information from the university said. Her roots within the Red Raider family and West Texas region run deep. She's an Odessa native and graduate of the first ever class of the TTUHSC Clinical Laboratory Science Program. She has published widely in peer-reviewed journals, and she joined TTUHSC professionally in 1987. In 2016, she was appointed Dean of the School of Health Professions, and it was under her leadership that the School of Health Professions earned national recognition for the quality of its training and programs. On the strength of that track record, Rice Spearman was unanimously selected to serve as TTUHSC's Provost and Chief Academic Officer in October 2019. She was named interim president of TTUHSC in November 2019. Midland College recognizes honor graduates. The Midland College Honors Program recognizes students at graduation who have received a minimum of 12 hours of honors credit with a partial emphasis in humanities and who maintain a 3.2 GPA. These students have completed a rigorous honors curriculum, including honors class projects. They will have the designee of Midland College Honors Scholar on their diploma. Many of the Midland College Honors Scholars are also members of Phi Theta Kappa, the oldest, largest, and most prestigious honor society servicing two-year colleges around the world. Membership is based on superior academic achievements and is conferred only by invitation to students who have a minimum of a 3.5 GPA.
Hello, this is April, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, May 17, 2020. Dear Abby, girlfriend is unsure of her place in boyfriend's heart. Dear Abby, I have been dating this guy for about a year. We are both 30. He lives at home. At first I thought it was to take care of his elderly father, but I soon realized it wasn't the case. His mom is sweet, yet overbearing. She inserts herself into his life at every opportunity. She talks to him like he's the butler. "Oh, perfect son of mine, won't you clear off the dinner table, clean the kitchen, do everything?" They cook together every night and attend church events together. He's in the choir with her because he said it pleases her. I think those are things he should be doing with a significant other. I don't feel secure in this relationship because I don't know my place. I feel like I have to compete with her, even though she tries to include me in everything. I see how she manipulates him, and it tears me apart inside. She needs him so much. I view it as a hindrance to his own life. He is doing for her what he could be doing for himself or his own family, but he's stuck in this mommy cycle. He will receive a large inheritance when his parents die. Could that be why he does it? He is a great lover and emotionally intelligent, but he depends on his mother too much for my comfort. I caught them in a long embrace, hug, after she had been away all weekend with his father. Then she came over to us while we were watching a movie and started kissing his head. It grossed me out. Help! Don't want this threesome. Dear Don't, after reading your letter, it's apparent that you are competing with his mother rather than she competing with you. There's a saying that if you want to know how a man will treat his wife, watch how he treats his mother. Rather than feel manipulated, be glad she tries to include you in the family circle. And keep in mind, if you want to enjoy the earthly rewards after the woman goes on to her heavenly one, she and her perfect son are a package deal. Dear Abby, I purchased a beautiful Tiffany engagement ring, but my girlfriend rejected my proposal. I will get only pennies on the dollar if I sell it. Would it be acceptable to save it for a future engagement proposal? Practical in California. Dear Practical, your letter illustrates the impracticality of buying an engagement ring before proposing. Whatever happened to the tradition of proposing and then, if the person says yes, selecting a ring together? In recent years, thanks to social media, engagements have become more like invitations to high school prom, elaborate and over the top. I do not think you should compound your mistake by offering another woman that ring in an effort to save money. If she were to find out, she would likely be both disappointed and hurt.
Infertility drug for low testosterone. To your good health for Tuesday. Dear Dr. Roach, the last time I saw my urologist, I asked him to check my testosterone level because it hadn't been checked in a couple of years. His nurse notified me that it was low and that I should make an appointment with one of his colleagues that specializes in treatment for that. When I saw that doctor, he prescribed generic Cialis for daily use and clomiphene oral tablets. Before I picked up the clomiphene tablets, my wife looked up that medicine in a book of prescription medicines and found that it was originally prescribed for women who were having difficulty getting pregnant. We were surprised, but thought that since the book was older, the prescription may now be used as a treatment for low testosterone or low libido. Can you give me some advice on this prescription? Dr. Roach writes, clomiphene is an anti-estrogen and in addition to being used for female infertility, is also used by some specialists to raise testosterone levels. Estrogen causes a feedback loop to stop testosterone synthesis, so blocking estrogen stimulates testosterone production. I read many anecdotal reports and a few case studies showing good results with clomiphene. However, this treatment is not approved by the Food and Drug Administration, and the data showing safety and efficacy not as good as treatment with testosterone. Anti-estrogens are also used in men with breast cancer, and side effects noted in this population included fatigue, 21%, anxiety, 20%, sleep disorders, 19%, decreased libido, 11%, and weight gain, 10%. What I find concerning is that you haven't told me about any symptoms you were having that prompted the testosterone test. treatment to raise testosterone in men without clear symptoms of low testosterone and repeatedly low morning testosterone levels is not recommended.
Dear Abby, for Tuesday, May 19th, 2020. Sister thinks twice about becoming a donor. Dear Abby, I'm currently waiting to donate my kidney to my sister, who is a year older than I am. My husband and I traveled many hours to get evaluated and tested at her clinic, so the insurance would cover the cost. Before heading back to our home state, we decided to stop by to pay her a surprise visit. And honestly, she did something that's making me rethink my decision. She was eating pizza and drinking a can of soda. Abby, my sister is on dialysis and supposed to be following a strict diet. It upset my husband, but he didn't say anything to her because we had just had an argument in the car about my decision to donate to her. It upset me too, but I didn't speak up either. I have been disciplined all my adult life, living a healthy life and making smart choices to benefit my body. Now that my sister needs a kidney, I feel this may have been the reason for my good habits. How can I stress to her how important it is to me that she adopt better eating habits if she is to get my kidney? I don't have another one to donate if she ruins this one. My husband and I will also be sacrificing time away from our four kids, ages 1 to 15, for the surgery and recovery. Second Thoughts in Texas. Dear Second Thoughts, your concerns are valid. Donating a kidney is a decision that needs to be well thought out. It is also a decision that is ultimately up to only you. It shouldn't be made because you feel pressured based on who you are donating to, in your case, your sister. Keep in mind, it's impossible to control another person's behavior. Once this precious gift is given, there's no going back. Speak up now and let her know how you felt about what you saw. But understand, it won't necessarily guarantee that she will make any changes. My suggestion is to continue this conversation with your Living Donor Social Worker, or ILDA, Independent Living Donor Advocate, at the transplant center where you were evaluated. These professionals can help to guide you toward making the best decision by further exploring your concerns, not only for you, but also your family. While being a living kidney donor can be a positive and beautiful experience, it is equally important to make sure that it is the right decision for you. The same is true for anyone considering donating. For those who are interested in becoming a potential kidney donor and would like to confidentially connect with someone who has already donated, contact the Patient Information Helpline of the National Kidney Foundation. Phone number 855-653-2273. However, this is not a substitute for speaking with a living donor social worker or ILDA. Dear Abby, I understand that non-binary folks prefer the pronoun they instead of she or he. It's going to take some getting used to, but that's okay. My question is, when using they but preferring to one person, do you use a singular or plural verb? Singular sounds weird, but plural is confusing. The grammar nerd. Dear grammar, I agree that the usage will take some people a while to get used to, but language is constantly changing. Use the plural form of the verb when speaking about a non-binary or gender-fluid person who prefers they. Example, they are a new member of our company. Or, I love singer Sam Smith. They have won 4 Grammy Awards.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Taurus and a moon in Aries until 9:10 p.m. when the moon enters Taurus. Happy birthday for Tuesday, May 19, 2020. Energetic and just, you work hard this year to achieve your goals, which you do with superb mastery. Your eloquence inspires others. Finances are a challenge, and you must learn to trust a helper in this regard. If single, you have a desire to remain free, so it is difficult for your admiring suitors. If attached, you pour your love into the relationship, and you both love to go adventuring together. Aries can be as intense as you. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. Today draws vivid dreams and insights. Your emotions and desires are strong. Maintain balance. You attract attention and can win support for a favorite project if you reach out to others. Associates will carry you forward with their warmth and enthusiasm. Tonight, return calls first. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 4 stars. Your state of mind benefits from peace and quiet and simplicity today. A charitable gesture makes you happier within. Be a true friend. Put the welfare of others first. You will examine and discuss new ideas. Useful information comes your way. Tonight, early bedtime. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 3 stars. Human interest values, such as friendship, are worth more than business acumen today. People offer advice and assistance. There are surprises revolving around love. Use care in establishing a new relationship. If you sense aggression, back away. Tonight, catch up on friends' news. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. It is not the time to procrastinate. Protect the reputation you have worked hard to establish. Resist the temptation to socialize or play jokes or games at work. Put business first. Peer pressure is strong. Avoid undesirables. Keep good company. Tonight, listen to an elderly female relative. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 4 stars. There are marvelous social prospects with foreign-born or well-traveled friends. Be friendly. There can be meetings with kind and valuable people. Studies progress well. Enroll in seminars and classes. Writing and publishing are favored. Tonight, add more fun to the moment. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. Today attracts you to subcultures and mysteries. Detective and occult or thriller themes in movies and books are engrossing. Accept your financial situation philosophically. It is essential that you enjoy what you have and not live beyond your means. Tonight, use caution with charge cards. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 4 stars. Love attachments undergo a catharsis. You discover how to rise above jealousy or insecurity to bring a more transcendent and supportive quality to love. Today helps you express your feelings with special eloquence. Tonight, speak your mind and accept the responses you get. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. You can treat an old illness or establish a more wholesome daily routine today. Pets are especially important. They provide a new level of comfort and companionship. You are expressive and especially sensitive. Tonight, people notice and respond to you. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 5 stars. Your social life is enlivened by invitations and visits via Zoom. You impress an admirer with a kind word. If you want to make gifts, try penning an original story or poem. An old love can be fondly remembered or even rejuvenated. Tonight, relax. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 3 stars. Today sees you looking for ways to improve and protect your home. You can add new members to your extended family and have a deepening of insight into your childhood. A remodeling and redecorating plan is almost irresistible. Tonight, you may look critically at it. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 3 stars. Timely responses are appreciated by others. Reassuring words from you assure security and goodwill. Keep up with prior commitments at work to protect your credibility. You feel pulled in several different directions. Complete projects in progress before considering new directions. Tonight, slow down. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Patience and practicality are the keys to security today. Keep working and resist the temptation to overextend, gamble, or take on a large debt load. Use discretion in acting on the advice or financial demands of others. Tonight, check in on an elderly family member. Born today, singer Sam Smith, 1992, activist Malcolm X, 1925, guitarist Pete Townsend, 1945.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.